Hey, it's Dan Patrick. Here's your chance to score with Maaco Auto Body Shop. Join us in San Francisco for Super Week. That's right, a trip for two, airfare, hotel stay, and VIP access to see us do our show. Maaco also giving away 5 free paint jobs and 10 swag bags. Enter daily for a chance to win. Get official rules at danpatrick.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Open to contiguous U.S. D.C. residents 18 or over. Ends 11/23/25.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. For today's episode, we're getting away from the case file, we're getting away from the trial transcripts, and we're getting down to talking about real people. I'm going to be joined today on the phone with Liz Ayer's daughter, Tasha Stiles. Tasha's been listening along with the podcast. I've been in communication with her over the last couple of weeks, and I asked her if she would be willing to come on the show and tell us about her mom, both so that we can see Liz Ayers as more than just a victim, but as a person, and also to help us understand her victimology better than what the police told us in their police file, which was very little, as you know. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with Tasha Stiles.
My name is Tasha Stiles. I am Liz Ayers' daughter.
How old were you at the time of your mom's murder?
I was 20 years old.
I wasn't sure. You and I talked a little bit about that before, but I wasn't sure if you were real young. But because of your age, you're probably the absolute best source we have to learn about your mom, both as a person and for victimology purposes. And I guess the first place for us to start is, can you just tell us about your mom? I know you've told me that, you know, your mom had some struggles, you know, around this time and while you were growing up. You know, my audience is aware of that too, but, you know, a lot of people have struggles, but just as openly and honestly as you can, just tell us about your mom and kind of your relationship with her.
Well, my mom was my best friend. She did have addiction problems. She was in and out of recovery. She would go for times without, you know, doing drugs, but she struggled with it. And I mean, but she was a single mother to me. She always kept we always had a place to live. We always had a house. She kept clothes on my back. You know, I always got new clothes for school, you know, when everybody else did things like that. I mean, she was a single mom, you know, during addiction. I think she did a pretty good job.
Did she struggle with addiction like through like your younger years when you were a small child too?
Yeah.
So yeah. This was kind of a lifelong struggle for her.
Well, I think when I was, I'm trying to think when I really first noticed her. I mean, I would say around like 10 or 11, I noticed. I mean, I really didn't know before then, but around 10 or 11, I started to notice things, you know. I don't know how to explain it. Like, I think she wasn't normal. You know, she wasn't, you know, acting normal, money problems, things like that.
Sure. And through that, you said to me when we talked last week, did the same thing you just said here, that your mom was your best friend. So can you talk to me about that relationship as you get, you know, as you got into your teenage years up into 20 years old? Like you said, mom had struggles, but you guys remained close.
Yeah, I had my son when I was young. I was 15. Oh, I had him when I was 16. So she was a new grandmother and we became close. I mean, we were best friends. She was my best friend I talked to her every single day. We didn't go a day without talking or seeing each other. You know, she wanted to be involved in her grandson's life and with my life. And she was trying to get better. Yeah, we became close before this happened. There was a time, you know, when I didn't understand, you know, like I was mad at her, like, oh, she chose, you know, drugs over me. But I just, you know, I didn't understand.
That's always so hard to understand, especially for a young person to, you know,
yeah.
When you're that young, you don't really understand addiction and it seems like a choice when it's not, that's got to be tough.
Right. Yeah. So I went through a period of that, but we did, like I said, you know, we talked every single day. She loved being a grandmother. She loved her grandson and she got him anytime she could. Any chance she got, you know, she gave him his first haircut. So she had my half brother. She, you know, he wasn't even 1 year old when this happened. So, you know, we had to celebrate his first year, his first birthday, me and my grandmother and the family with him. I had him for a couple months when it first happened. And then he went with his dad's family.
Was your mom married at the time that she
was? She was married to Lacey Ayers. She's deceased now.
Okay. And that is that the baby's dad?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, his name is AJ.
Okay. How's he doing now?
He is in Army or Air Force. We don't really talk. I haven't really spoke with him. He moved with his dad's family. I think his dad's sister and her husband adopted him in another state. I don't want to get the state wrong. I haven't spoken with him in a long time.
Okay. You say he's in the military?
Yeah.
Nice.
So as far as I know, he's doing good. I mean, I've seen pictures and stuff like that. I mean, we just haven't really kept up.
So as we're kind of like trying to, you know, paint a picture of your mom as a person, you know, up till now, we've only heard about her as the victim of this crime. But so she was a mother, your mother. She was also the mother of a baby and married
AJ. Yeah,
AJ. And
she was married to Lacey. And they had a trailer in Woodland Village in Portage. They lived together there at the time.
How far of a drive is that from Gary, where all this happened?
10 minutes.
So it wasn't far away.
It's like right down the highway there.
Okay. Was she working at the time? Did she have a job?
No, she wasn't working. She had just had the baby. So she was staying home with the baby. And Lacey, he was an over-the-road truck driver. So he was the provider.
Gotcha. You mentioned earlier that, you know, your mom was trying to do better. You talked to me a little bit about that last week. So that's kind of getting us closer to, you know, what was going on in her life leading up to this. Can you talk about that process? What was going on with her trying to get better?
Well, she didn't go into any rehabs or anything like that. I think she had started going. Well, I don't think. I know she had started going to meetings, and she had told me that she had enjoyed the meetings. She was worried about it. She was kind of nervous. She, you know, just basically stay home, you know, and she would go to meetings and then, you know, just spend time with me and my son and AJ. And, you know, just try to, you know, just stay away from people, places and things, basically. You know, she wanted to be clean. She didn't want to be an addict. But obviously, you know, that's hard. That's a hard road. So, but I mean, she really wanted to be clean and wanted to be a part of our lives. You know, we had just repaired our relationship. So she was just looking forward to being able to, you know, be, you know, drug free and with her family, spend time with, you know, her grandson and her new baby and me.
Did she talk about her kind of road to recovery a lot when you were in, say, that month leading up to her death? Is, you know, was it a big part of her life, something she talked about a lot?
I wouldn't say she talked about it a lot. We didn't, I mean, she just really, the only thing that we talked about was the meetings, honestly. She wouldn't come to me, like, say if she, like, was craving or had a craving or anything like that. She wouldn't talk to me about it. Even though I told her, I would tell her, you know, if, you know, you could always talk to me or anything like that. But, you know, she just, that's really all we talked about was the meeting and that, you know, that she wanted to, you know, to be drug free and she wanted the help, like, you know, the meetings and stuff like that. Because I did talk to her about, we did talk about rehab, but, you know, it costs money. And
right.
That she didn't have, So, you know, and I thought, I think she was doing, you know, pretty good. I mean, you know, she backslid and yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened, but.
So before I get into, because you told me a little bit about like the day before the murder, and we'll talk about that. But what was her, you know, she had an addiction. What did she have, a particular drug that really gave her the most problems?
Crack cocaine. She, that was her drug of choice. And then she did smoke weed. The day before she had called me because she wanted a babysitter. She had been drinking and her and I had argued actually, because I knew that she was going to go out and relapse. And so I came and picked up my little brother, and her and I kind of had some words. They weren't great. I don't, kind of haunts me, you know, to know that our last conversation was basically an argument over the fact that I knew that she was going to go out and use. And she basically was kind of, you know, she was drinking. So she, you know, she didn't care. You know what I mean? She knew what she was doing. She was going to do it.
Now, when you say that, but was, you had told me when we talked and you just said here that it was the day or the night before. When you say that, do you mean the night before her body was discovered, or the night before that?
The night before her body was discovered. That I had AJ the morning that her body was. Or I don't even know if it was morning. It was morning, right?
It was around noon, 1 o'clock, somewhere around there.
Okay. Well, I had gotten a phone call from my mom's friend Sharon and Naomi. Naomi was my friend. Sharon was my mom's friend. Their mother and daughter. And I had gotten a phone call. I didn't even have a phone at my house. My neighbors who lived behind me came and knocked on my door. And I walked over there and got on the phone, and it was Naomi. And she told me that she was like, your mom's dead. Your mom's dead. They found your mom. And I was like, what are you talking about? You know, I hung up on her and I called my grandmother and stuff. And then, you know, we figured it out and we went down. My grandmother was in Shipshawana. So I had called her. She was retired from the mill. And she was working at a Dollar General store there in Shipshawana. So I called her and let her know what was going on. And then I went to her mother's house, my Grandma Jameson, and waited for her to get there. And then, I went to my Grandma Jameson's house. I was waiting for her to get there. And my Aunt Sheila came and picked me up. My dad's sister. She came and picked me up. And we went down to the Gary police station to see if I can identify my mother. And when I got there, the detective, I don't remember his name. I know he was a white detective, I believe. He told me that they had already been identified, that he didn't need me to identify my mother. And I kind of argued back, like, I want to see if that's my mother, you know. And he said, you know, well, basically, if you want us to catch these guys, you got to let us do our job and kind of brush us off, you know. And, you know, basically he had his identification and that was that. He was very rude with my grandmother. So the detective, when my grandmother finally got down to the police station to talk to the detective, he said to her something along the lines of, well, you know what kind of person she was. And, well, she smacked him, like my grandmother smacked the detective in the face. And
well, he deserved
it. I thought she was going to go to jail. So I was like, he was very rude.
Hey, everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
So there was some drug use, and you mentioned to me last week that there was, you know, she was involved in some sex work that was connected to the drug use. The detective saying, you know what kind of person she is. Had she had run-ins with the law before? Did she have a record? Had she been arrested for, you know, either the sex work or the drugs anything?
I'm not sure if she had ever been arrested for any kind of prostitution charges. I'm sure she had drug charges. I couldn't tell you exactly what charges or how many times she had been to jail. I mean, she was the main person in my life taking care of me. So she wasn't in jail, I mean, often that I can even remember.
Do you remember if she was ever in jail at all?
She might have been gone for like 30 days or something once, but I was with my grandmother. I mean, I can't ever remember her like ever being in jail.
It's just interesting that the detectives already had that view of her. There had to have been some kind of history.
Yeah, I'm sure there's history. I'm sure I don't remember it. I mean,
right.
If I was younger, like, and she was in jail, I don't remember it. So
if we can jump back to, so you went to see her to pick up your brother the night all of this happened. So we kind of have this, you know, in kind of a timeline of where she went. We have Michelle Flores, who, you know, said that she showed up at her house that night late at night. Do you recall even about what time? You know, was it around dinner time? Was it after bed? Was it really late when you went over and picked up your brother and had the interaction with her?
Okay, so it was evening time. I know it was just getting dark. I remember because by the time I had went, so I lived in South Haven. From the time I drove South Haven, I lived in Meadowview Trailer Park. From the time I drove from there to Crestmore Trailer Park, where she was at Tom's house, which is the owner of the vehicle that was found at the ball field, it was just getting dark. But by the time I had got there, had the argument with her, got my brother in the car and got back home, I was so upset that I when I got out of the car, I accidentally locked my brother in the car, and I had to like break the little window on the truck to get in to get him out. So by the time I had gotten in the house, it was dark. So I would say probably between six and seven.
Six and seven. Okay. Yeah, I was trying to think. It was February.
Maybe 6 or 8.
Yeah, and that's central time over there. So yeah, it probably gets dark around 6 o'clock-ish, 5, 6 o'clock.
Right.
Yeah. So you get home, you said, so you didn't pick her up at her house. You picked her up at Tom's house. Can you tell me about Tom?
I didn't pick her up. I picked AJ up.
Or you picked, yeah. Right. You picked your brother up, but she was at Tom's house, not at her house. Can you tell us about Tom, who he is and what that relationship was?
He was a really good guy. He was like in love with my mom. He really was. He would let her use his car, and he had recently gotten the club. Well, she would take his car without his permission. He would let her walk on him. Like, you know, he was in love with her. And so she would take the car, and he had recently gotten the club so that she wouldn't be able to take his car while he was sleeping or at work or something like that. I mean, he loved her. He would do anything for her. You know, anytime she needed anything, you know, he was there if she called him.
And you said that he got the club for the car because so she wouldn't take
my
it?
My mom would take it. Yeah, she would take it, like if he was sleeping. Or she would, you know, most of the time he would let her use it. Like she would take him to work and then keep the car. But sometimes, you know, when he'd be sleeping at night, she would take the car without his permission. And so he got tired of that. So he got the club for the car.
Was there any, did you ever have a discussion with him after this happened? Because yeah. I'm wondering, you know, you heard, obviously we spoke after you heard the autopsy episode, or we've texted since then. You know, and it that injury to me, to your mom's head, looks like it could have been, you know, something.
I believe that. I believe it was the club. I don't think that Tom ever recovered. I mean, it took him a long time. I don't know if he ever even recovered the car. I think he did, but it took a very long time. And I'm not sure of if the club was recovered with the car or not.
It's not in the crime scene photos. There's no club in the car.
Yeah, that's what Nikki said. I've spoken with Nikki
mm-hmm.
Jackson about this. That's how, you know, I became aware of your podcast and stuff. So, you know, she told me that it wasn't at the crime scene, but I know that it was in that car at all times. Like, I mean, if she was driving it, it was in the car.
So that's interesting. That's something we'll put a pin in for later for sure.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah. So that interaction with your mom. So, you know, what I'm trying to do as, you know, an investigator is to, you know, try to get an idea of where her head's at, where she might have any risk factors. You had mentioned to me when we spoke last week that she had been, I think you had said like 30 days sober up to that point, and she was relapsing. Tell me about that conversation and what did she tell you she was going to do?
When I got there, I was upset because AJ wasn't dressed. He was only in a diaper. And she had been drinking. I said, you know, what are you doing? Where do you need to go? What's going on? Like, are you going to go out and use? Like, I know what you're doing. And she's like, yeah, I'm going out. I'm grown, basically, is what she told me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, then I'm going to take my brother and I'll take him with me. And she's like, yeah, take him, you know? And, sorry.
That's okay.
You know, I told her, I said some things that I regret saying. You know, I told her, I can't believe you're going to do this. I even said, I hate you. So, yeah.
I think you had used the words to me when we talked last week that she said something about she was going out to hustle. I think, or there was some phrase like
hustle.
That she said.
That's what she said. She said, I'm going out to hustle, basically. I'm going to go hustle. I'm grown. And she said that if I didn't want to keep AJ, then he could go. Then his dad would probably keep him. And I said, no, I'll take my brother with me. He's fine. Whatever you do, whatever you're going to do, don't involve him. I'll keep him with me. And so, you know, you get your head straight because this is ridiculous, you know. And I even said I told her I was going to call her husband and talk to him about it because she was going to be doing this, and I didn't want her to have AJ. So, you know, I told her I would keep him, and she was, you know, that was an argument because obviously, you know, she just doesn't think she has a problem. But so yeah, it was a horrible conversation.
So then she leaves. What I'm finding interesting is you said that she was drinking. And this may help us some with some timeline stuff, because in her toxicology report, she had no alcohol in her system.
Yeah, well, that's what she had. She had told me that she was drinking, and she acted like she had been, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I didn't, when I was there, I didn't see any alcohol containers, and I didn't like smell her breath, but she told me that she had been drinking.
Did she seem to you like she was drunk?
I mean, she wasn't like sloppy drunk, but like, you know, lippy and, you know, like I'm grown, like I'm, don't, you're not going to tell me what to do. You're my daughter. You know what I mean? Like, that's not normal behavior.
Yeah. So that, and if we're talking 5-6 o'clock and we're talking, yeah. So there was enough time. So maybe she had a couple drinks or something, but that's just interesting. It's another one of those things that we just note to know that, you know, there, that she at least said she was drinking back at that part of the day.
Definitely. Yeah.
So then she goes to Michelle. Did you know Michelle Flores?
No.
Did you ever have any conversations with her after this happened?
I did not. I didn't know who she was at all.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just looking to just, you know, kind of pulling any threads to see if there's any more places we can get information. Did you know? So Michelle had basically said that your mom and Sheila Barty didn't know each other. Did you know Sheila? Do you have any insight into that?
I did not know Sheila. No, I had never met Sheila before or anything like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I know that my mom, Amp, she was really good friends with Amp. They were friends for years, many years.
Amp from the other crime scene. So they did know each other.
Yes. That was my, Amp was one of my mother's good friends.
Okay. That's incredibly good to know. Because as you know from, because you've been listening along the podcast, you know, what we're trying to figure out, is there any connection between these two scenes? And that's obviously.
Definitely. I know Amp. I knew Amp. I mean, so.
You knew Amp. Your mom knew Amp. Yeah. They were good friends. So you think it is reasonable to assume or at least hypothesize that at some point she would have went to Amp's house that night?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Okay. That's good to know. Now, was Amp someone that she, that you know, that she used with?
Yes. He used drugs too.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that's, I don't know if that's how they met or whatever, but they, I mean, they, even when they weren't, I mean, they would still talk even. Yeah, I mean, they probably talked more, you know, when she would be using, but I mean, I had seen him and they, you know, like they probably seen each other at bars and stuff like that, but he had stopped by her house and stuff like that because she smoked weed. And so that's how I met him and knew that they were friends.
What about Suzanne and Angela, which Angela went by Renee, but the Wallace, either one of the Wallace sisters, did you know them or do you know if you're...
I didn't know them at all. No.
Okay. Just Amp.
Yeah.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
So Do you know, and this is probably, I guess this is kind of a stretch, but maybe you know from growing up with your mom in that situation, if she was, so she leaves the house and she goes, we know at some point she ends up at Michelle's house. She says she's going to a liquor store. If she was going out to hustle, as you put it, to get drugs, however she was going to do that, what was, do you know what that process, how did she usually go about obtaining? Did she meet somebody somewhere? Did she have a regular dealer she would get a hold of? Do you have any idea?
How would she, well, I would think because she went there and paid, she paid the drug dealer is what I believe. And they told her to meet at the liquor store. And I don't know what happened from there because, I mean, it would be speculation, but I mean, they could have met at the liquor store and followed from there somewhere else. I have no idea.
So that is that, and I know you're not kind of in that world, but you were kind of adjacent to it. Is that, was that kind right. of a norm? Would you go meet, you know, was, because we heard go to the liquor store and thought go to get booze, but you think there's a possibility that the liquor store was the place she would be going to meet a dealer?
Right. Yeah. That's what I would think.
Okay. That's good. And you know, without putting too much of a point on it, you had told me that, you know, that she would trade sex work for drugs on occasion.
For money, I never knew about her doing it for straight up drugs. I mean,
oh,
I
so
knew
she would do it for money.
I don't
money.
Know.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think, I mean, I can't tell you for sure, but I never heard her say or anybody else say that she would do anything like that for drugs. It was always money. She was getting money.
She was always getting money. So yeah. that's an interesting distinction too to have, and it's an important distinction for us to have because, you know, if she's meeting someone to trade sex for drugs directly, that's just a different situation than if she was meeting, you know, someone to buy drugs with money.
I don't think that my mother would page a drug dealer without having money. You know what I mean? Like that would be her. She would have went out and hustled and got some money, and then she would have called a dope dealer, and then they would have told her where to meet at, and then that's what she would have done.
That's probably more important than you might think, that distinction that you just made right there. Because there's a gap. We have a gap in time, too, right? So it's, you know,
2 hours.
Yeah. Well, that's after she left Michelle's house. But there's a gap in time before she got to Michelle's house because, you know, in this, you know how it is. In February,
yeah,
it's dark at 5-6 o'clock. Well, she doesn't show up to Michelle's house for 3-5 hours later. So
yeah,
maybe during that time was when she went out and earned some money. And then the contact from Michelle's house was to use the phone to get a dealer. Because that what you said, I don't know, for some reason, what you just said really struck me as
important. That's truly what I believe exactly happened is that she went out and hustled the money and she went to Michelle's to use the phone. And she did. And she paged them and he called back and they told her to go meet him at the liquor store. And then, you know, if they met at the liquor store, I don't know if they would stay following from here or if they would do a transaction there. You know, I don't know how that would go.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I have known my mother to pull off and follow a drug dealer to get drugs.
Sure.
You know, from a place that he said to meet him at. So, sure. You know, I'm depending on who, I mean, I don't know who they are, or if it's the same, you know what I mean?
Right.
I have no idea.
Okay. Yeah. That's one of those things that some people might, I think is a big difference, but it's making a big difference in my mind that those would be two separate things. And when you said she wouldn't page a drug dealer unless she already had money, that's an important thing to know.
That's what I believe. I mean, I've been thinking about it. And I mean, it just doesn't make sense unless she had money. Why would she call him?
Yeah. A lot of elements of that make a lot of sense. Did you ever, after this happened, so you've got, mm-hmm. five victims spread across town. Everybody, you know, everybody has friends and family scattered all over the place. Did you ever talk to anyone, you know, was there any talk, you know, the word on the street about what people think happened or anything like that? Or did you ever get a good impression, or were you just too far removed for once that you weren't kind of in that part of the community?
Yeah, I wasn't. I was pretty far removed from that. I've heard later on in the years, and I probably couldn't even tell you who I heard it from. I mean, it's about somebody named, I mean, I don't even know if I want to say, like.
No, you don't need to say it. We can talk privately, but whatever the name is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I did hear of a name. That's all. I mean, like, and it was years later. It wasn't, you know, right then. It really messed me up. I mean, I was really, really, really messed up from it. I like it, you know. So, I just. I don't know. I wouldn't have been speaking to anybody besides, you know, I was with my family.
Right. Right. And you had your little brother to take care of and your own child. What was, you mentioned that interaction with the detective when you went to the police station and the way he talked to your grandmother and that whole interaction. Did you get much of a sense of what the investigation was like? Like, did any of the detectives or anybody ever like contact you and ask you about ask you any of these questions that I'm asking you?
No, never. Not one time.
Do you know if they ever did with your grandmother or anybody, her husband, anyone?
I know that my grandmother and her husband, they were at trial every day. I didn't go to the trial. My grandmother was there. She wrote a statement. I believe that her husband had to stand up and read it for her. I don't know if she had talked to detectives at all. As far as I know, no, I don't think so. You know, I think that they had what they were after, basically.
Well, it's so maddening that you were the last person to talk to her before she set off on the journey that ended in this. And they never bothered to sit and have a conversation with you and ask you about any of it.
And more so, you know, when I went to the police, down to the police station to try to identify my mother, I was basically, you know, brushed aside and said, you know, we've already ID'd her. We don't need your ID. And, you know, wouldn't allow me to even identify my mother. I was saying, like, I don't know if this person knows my mother. How do I know that that's my mother? You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and but basically, you know, yeah, I was brushed off. And he basically, you know, if you want us to catch these guys, you know, you got to let us do our job. And
well, I'm so sorry you went through all of this and everything leading up to it. I'm really glad that we were able to connect, as, you know, as I told you when we talked the first time, you know, wrongful conviction cases or potential wrongful conviction cases are very difficult. Because there's the family members like you that are out there that are kind of reliving this. But I've been really appreciative of how supportive you've been of this process as we've been going through.
Well, I'm definitely happy. I'm very thankful that you brought this back out to light. You know, this is very suspicious to me. This is crazy to me that nothing. I mean, like the investigation. There was barely any investigating of it. As far as I'm hearing and reading about, like you said, I wasn't spoke to. I'm pretty sure that my grandmother really wasn't questioned or anything like that.
I don't think they even ever made an effort to find out if she made it to a liquor store or what liquor store it might have been.
Right. Or like, what about the phone call? Check to see who, I mean, like, I don't, I can't, wouldn't there be a way to check like the last number they called or like, I don't know. Like from the phone company or anything like that?
Yeah. So, and this is a little spoiler, but listen, we're going to get into the phone, but they did figure out what the phone numbers were. And as soon as they figured out that none of them had any connection to Chris Bynum, it just dropped out of the narrative.
They didn't care. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's just crazy.
Yeah. So it's, as you know, as we talked, we're at the very beginning of this process. It's going to be a long journey. And I'll continue to stay in touch with you throughout this whole process. And you've already, like I said, a lot of times people don't realize the information they have is important, but the things that you're sharing with us are important besides the facts that kind of help us piece together what might have happened that night, but also just so that people understand who your mom was. I don't want people seeing her as just this victim. She was a person. She was a mother. She was a grandmother.
Definitely. She was a great mother. I love my mother. I miss my mother every day. She was my best friend. You know, she was a great grandmother. You know, she had an addiction problem. That's it. You know, she wasn't a violent person. She wasn't, she just had an addiction problem. Her drug choice was crack cocaine and it had a hold on her. And I really just hope that, you know, through this process, we can find justice for everybody involved.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.